Blog Talk Radio.
Another broadcast of RightStream Tuesday. This is your host, Daria Ann, coming at you from sunny South Florida. At least it's sunny right at the moment. We've had some really bad thunderstorms this morning, which were giving me a little bit of pause, wondering if I was going to have another situation where I was going to lose the internet and have to reschedule my two guests today. But fortunately, that has not happened, and it looks like the sun is out at least temporarily. And those of you who live in South Florida or who've ever visited here, no, you all know how that goes. So we'll keep our fingers crossed and hope for the best. But wherever you are in the world listening, I welcome you to the show. As always, I have two wonderful guests lined up. But before we get to that, I wanted to stop for a moment. I found a beautiful prayer on a blog today for the citizens of Oklahoma who were obviously very severely impacted by a terrible tornado yesterday, loss of lives, loss of children's lives, and it's just so tragic. And I'm so inspired by the way the people of that state and in that community are really pulling together and helping each other out. So I found this beautiful prayer today on a blog called praytogodtoday.blogspot.com. And if you will indulge me, I would just like to read this prayer out loud for everyone affected by the tornadoes in Oklahoma. Father, we ask that in your most gracious love, you may send protection and help, strength and peace, courage and comfort to all of those within Oklahoma as they move forward. Loving Jesus, please be with those who have lost a loved one in this tornado, we pray. Oh, gracious Father, please bring comfort to these families. Let your love and comfort be felt. Let those struggling feel your support. May those who are lost find you. Amen. So we are certainly keeping everyone in Oklahoma in our prayers today. And if you want to make a donation, I know a lot of good charities are set up to do that. I know the Red Cross. On Twitter today, I saw a number that you can text if you want to donate money. So, you know what, during the next break, I will go ahead and find that and put a link to that in the chat room. So just a little bit more, just a few programming notes before I go ahead and bring on my first guest, Robert Bertrand of the blog Thank You Capitalism. He is a writer, blogger, and culture warrior, and I can't wait to get into some good discussion with him based on our Twitter chat last Thursday. But I just want to remind everyone that I am also an independent author, blogger, editor, ghostwriter, and founder of the RightStream Radio Network here on Blog Talk Radio. And just as a brief programming note, because it's 1:05 and I want to bring my guest on the line here, please check out all of our shows here by going to blogtalkradio.com/RightStream. As of right now, I have two other hosts on this network. We have Lisa Tarvez, who hosts a show called Just Believe with Lisa Tarvez every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern. Lisa's a metaphysician. She's an author of the book called Just Believe, which chronicles her journey from being a young child able to communicate with angels to actually turning that into a very successful career as an adult in healing other people. And Lisa brings on some fascinating guests in the areas of health and wellness, paranormal, angelic communication, personal growth, all of those good things, all those inspiring, uplifting topics she covers on her program. And she does a wonderful job, and she always has fascinating guests. So check out the archives for Just Believe. And again, it's blogtalkradio.com/RightStream, and you'll be able to find them. Also, we have John D. Gresham, military author and historian, also a journalist for the Defense Media Network, who hosts Military Monday with John D. Gresham every Monday here on the network at 1 p.m. Eastern. And John, obviously, his focus is on the military, and he interviews a fascinating variety of authors and experts on various aspects of the United States military and military history, whether it's the Cold War, Navy battleships, the Air Force. John always has an excellent program, and I always learn something new when I listen. So again, blogtalkradio.com/RightStream, and you'll be able to listen to the archives of Military Monday with John D. Gresham. All right, so without further ado, I want to go ahead and bring my first guest, Robert Bertrand, on the line today. And I just want to say that I first met Robert on Twitter because he's also a volunteer for an organization called the Armed Citizen Project, which helps people, low-income people who would like to be able to defend themselves, provides them the training and the weapons that they need to be able to do that. And they're doing excellent work in that regard. But through that effort and through bringing him on another show that I co-host, Robert and I got to talking, and I discovered that he's also a writer and a blogger and an aspiring author and very involved in the cultural aspects of politics, which is also the path that I'm taking right now as well. I believe culture is politics. We need to get engaged and get in the game, and we need to start promoting and supporting talented constitutional conservatives, talented libertarians, people who have another viewpoint that we rarely, if ever, see in mainstream Hollywood or in pop culture anywhere. So without further ado, I want to welcome to the program Robert Bertrand of thankyoucapitalism.blogspot.com and the Armed Citizen Project. Hey, Robert, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for joining me again.
I'm glad that the weather worked out.
Oh, me too. A couple of weeks ago, we had a horrific storm, and it knocked out the internet, and I had to reschedule the two authors, and I thought, I don't want to have to do that again to these, to my guests today. So glad it's working out. But Robert, I'm really glad that you're able to join me this Tuesday, considering that we just had our RightStream Twitter chat last Thursday, and I kind of wanted to pick up with some of those topics, if that's okay with you. But before we do that, let me just go ahead and give you an opportunity to introduce yourself to the audience, and then we'll start talking culture, writing, politics, and whatever else is on your mind.
Okay, well, my name is Robert Bertrand. You guys can follow me on Twitter, TY Capitalism. It's kind of been an interesting ride. I only got Twitter, I think, in January, and out of kind of nowhere, I became sort of an online activist. I had been an activist previously before I joined the Navy. I had, kind of fought the good fight against censorship at my high school in Jacksonville, Florida. And I've always been very political and very outspoken as far as the First Amendment goes. And very recently, within the, I guess soon as I joined the military, I really learned a lot about guns, and I learned a lot more about the Constitution, and I became a big Second Amendment guy as well. And you kind of have to be if you're a big First Amendment person, because there's only one thing keeping your First Amendment rights, and that's the Second Amendment.
Absolutely.
So, there's my little intro.
And Robert, you know what? You're gonna think I'm nuts, but you know, just for anybody listening who may not know the First and Second Amendment, let's go ahead and remind everybody what those amendments are and why we should all be very concerned about preserving them.
Well, I'm sad that anybody would actually have to learn this way, but the First Amendment is about freedom of speech, and if I want to say something controversial, I have the right to do that. Of course, the Second Amendment is about the freedom to bear arms, and no law shall be made infringing upon that law or that right. And it's a very basic human right. It's about self-defense. Do you have the right to defend yourself when attacked?
Mm-hmm.
And I believe the answer is a loud yes. And because I'm so into freedom of speech and anti-censorship issues, I definitely got on board with that one as well.
Absolutely. Robert, I think it's important with the Second Amendment, too, because I think the context of history gets overlooked in many cases when we're discussing
Definitely.
The Second Amendment and the reason why the founders put it in there. So let me get your take on that. And, you know, it's sort of like in the broader sense, obviously, yes, for self-defense. But in terms of, you know, the way the world looked when our founders set that up, tell us why, you know, really what their main motivation was.
Oh, well, it was definitely to defend against tyranny. I mean, if you read anything by Thomas Jefferson or any of the other founders, they make it very clear that the idea behind it wasn't so that you and I can go out hunting. I'm not a hunter at all. And it definitely wasn't about muskets. It wasn't about the tool. It was about being able to defend not only your life but your liberty. And a lot of people don't seem to understand that at this point. Same thing with freedom of speech. It's so fundamental to be able to disagree with the majority. And if you don't have that right, then life is pretty horrific. I mean, you have a country like North Korea, which is a police state. They don't have First Amendment or Second Amendment protections. And that's basically what you get when you don't have that. And our country right now is not necessarily hurtling towards, but definitely sluggishly moving towards that sort of police state where you don't have the right to insult somebody or insult a religion, or you don't have the right to take a gun into your own home for self-protection. And it's kind of frightening, but I believe that the majority of the country right now is still very pro Second Amendment and very pro First Amendment. So I think we're lucky on that part.
Absolutely. And, you know, Robert, last week, one of my guests was Hungarian author and political refugee, Balázs Szabó. He's an artist and an author. And I love showcasing people like him on my show and on Twitter because this man lived it. I mean, he was born in 1943 in Hungary, lived through the Soviet occupation. His book is called Knock in the Night, and I highly recommend that everybody read it because – you know, this is a firsthand account. One of the things that frustrates me, I think, in our culture is how – and we can talk about why this is, and obviously I want to get your insights on that, even though I think we all kind of know. But, you know, some people seem to have this romanticized notion of what communism is. And particularly for those people, I highly recommend reading this book because I believe that it's so important for Americans to learn from one who's been there. He knows firsthand what communism truly is and its brutality. And, I mean, there were sections of his book where I was just crying out loud. And it was one of those books that really just – it haunted me for days after I read it. And the thing is, it wasn't fiction. I mean, this was reality. This was one man's experience. And when you think of all the millions of people who've been oppressed by communism and any totalitarian system, I mean, it's all about – imposing control over citizens and instilling fear in order to impose greater control and make people so afraid that they can't even speak to each other for fear that somebody's going to snitch on them. So I think it's important to showcase people like that. And so why do you think it is that, you know, that Americans in particular seem to have, some of them anyway, not everybody, have this idea that, oh, you know, communism sounds like a great idea?
Well, they, you know, on one hand, they definitely have the luxury of distance. It's, you know, it's been a long time since a major communist country has been in operation. I mean, if you were born past 1993, it seems like something that people talk about in history books. It's very hard to get an understanding of just how brutal such a lifestyle is, and how many people died, or and a lot of things like that. It's just the fact that it's happened so long ago to them, before they existed. I mean, and you know, another great book in that subject is, of course, the Gulag Archipelago, and it's actually one of my favorite books. I still need to read the book that was highlighted on your show last week. I would love to. In fact, I've written a couple of blogs. I have a series that I need to get back onto, but about the evils of communism. Basically, what happens, of course, is once you take away property rights, and once you take away people's free speech, and you have to, because once somebody starts complaining about how they want more, you have to do something to keep other people from wanting more, because capitalism is basically the natural state of humanity. It really is. I mean, if I want something, then I'm going to have to work for it. It's just reality. Communism basically tells you, well, we all work together, and it'll just work out somehow. But it usually ends up in lots of prison camps and forced labor, which is basically the whole idea that, you know, communism was supposed to fight against. They didn't want people to be exploited, but they ended up exploiting everybody at the expense of a very elite few in the government, which is,
mm-hmm.
you know, we could talk about this all day, but it's just very depressing.
Well, you know, let's turn it around now. I want to talk about, let's talk first of all, Robert, about your blog, Thank You Capitalism, because you mentioned capitalism, and I think what you're doing is so important to try to extol the virtues of capitalism,
yeah.
The virtues of capitalism, and I do agree with you. I think that is a natural state. I believe that, you know, whether you believe in God or not, I mean, I happen to, but I believe that each person is here for their own unique purpose. And anything other than a capitalistic system interferes with that individual's ability to fulfill their destiny, pursue their goals, whatever it may be, their purpose for being here. But tell us about your blog and the ways that you're trying to educate people about the goodness of capitalism.
Well, I'm trying to do it in two different strategies. One, the very logical explanation that, you know, there's been no system other than capitalism that has worked this well as far as creating more for as many people. But you can't just focus on that because, you know, the reason people like President Obama and others are often winning this conversation, not in general but in specific pieces, is because they have a strong moral argument. They like to point out that there's rich people out there who could give a little bit more, so why not take from them and we'll all just be happy. But unfortunately, it ignores the reality. So a good argument is one that both has a moral aspect to it, but also a logical aspect to it. And I believe that, you know, just putting, you know, the message out there is very important. Now, when I created this blog, it was not actually meant for consumption by the general public. I would be happy if anybody ever, you know, commented on it, but I made it specifically because I was interested in practicing a lot of my more logical writing. And I just wanted a place to put it and kind of to get a feel for what a lot of different writers do. And it kind of became popular, and I became somewhat popular on Twitter because of it. And suddenly I started making a lot of new friends and getting into political activism. It's interesting how things start out, you know?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I think, I mean, and we'll talk about social media in a little bit, because I think the power of social media cannot be overstated. And I think, you know, anybody that's in this fight or in this cause really needs to get out there, especially Twitter. Twitter has been phenomenal. But a couple of things, Robert, that when you were talking came to mind. And first of all, you know, our mutual friend Jamie Quill, who I actually met through you, so thank you very much for putting me in touch with her. She was on my show a couple of weeks ago, and just getting back to what you were saying, making that moral argument, Jamie was talking about the need for, you know, constitutional conservatives, libertarians, to be good storytellers, because that's what's lost in all of this. And that is sort of the emotional appeal, the ability to tell a good story. And I just want to note, and you and I know this is the case, but it doesn't even matter, because, you know, if they're telling a good story, it doesn't necessarily have to be true in order to fool people. But, you know, a few years back, there was a book out called Who Really Cares? And it was a study by a professor, I believe, out of Syracuse, and I can't recall his name right now. But it proved with hard data that conservatives outgive people on the left by a margin of almost 3-1. So while that's a great moral argument about rich people giving back more, the fact of the matter is, I believe during the 2008 election, it was proven that Sarah Palin, VP candidate, gave like 3 or 4 times as much to charity as did Joe Biden. But yet, see, these things get buried because our side hasn't been able to get the story out there and get control of the narrative. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, there's, you know, definitely the whole, you know, class issue. There's really no amount of money that a rich person can get or can give that will make up for the fact that they enjoy a nice life and they have a nice house. That's taboo. They're not allowed to enjoy things that we might not be able to. But they always put that in the situation where their wealth is somehow stopping you and I from becoming wealthy. And it's very illogical, but it does make for a good story, because, I mean, if you look at you know, Hollywood or many stories in the publishing world, it's always a rich, powerful person as a villain, or apathetic to the plight of the regular man. And it's very unfortunate that this meme has kind of been so successful in invading the ideology of just the regular kid who's growing up, going to school right now.
Right.
But it has been very successful, and, you know, they have won to this point. They are winning. But through winning, they've also made a mistake in understanding the market. The market needs balance as far as the content, what's being produced. People want all sorts of different stories, and they're not giving us that. They're not giving us diversity of thought, which I have found exists among the right. The kind of stories that we're seeing from Hollywood, like these horrible movies, like I think it was Movie 54 came out or something like that, and basically, all the repackaged reboots and basically, mm-hmm. I mean, horrible films, horrible books. They just keep on coming and coming, and they're wondering why their industries are failing. The publishing industry right now is failing spectacularly, and the movie. I mean, just going to the movie theater, there might be one good film every month, if you're lucky. The vast majority of them are boring, stale, and again, they use all the same stereotypes and false premises. If the person's from the South, he's a redneck, and he's possibly
mm-hmm.
racist. Definitely hates everything new. I mean, you know,
yes.
Liberals like to call it flyover country.
Right.
But when you actually, you know, meet these people or people in different situations, conservatives, they're not hateful people. They're not intolerant. They might disagree with somebody for their lifestyle or the way that they're acting or their beliefs, but they're not going out there and killing people. They're not what Stephen King would have you believe they are.
Exactly. I mean, there's a difference between tolerating someone's lifestyle, even if you don't agree with it. I mean, and then we get back to that First Amendment rights. You know, it almost seems like whether we're talking about whatever it is, gun control, gay marriage, if you're not to the left, if you're not like, wow, I think gay marriage is great, if you say, you know, I believe it's morally wrong, but I respect a person's right to live their own life, that's not good enough for them. That automatically makes you a hater. And I think it's done just to shut down, to shut us up, to shut down debate. I mean, you know, unless you are in lockstep with what they want you to believe, then you're a hater. And there's zero tolerance on their side.
And on the subject of gay marriage, it's very interesting because I'm very, very pro gay marriage. But I've noticed that on the left, they're using it more as a method to kind of get a little bit more control over the church. They have this plan where once gay marriage is completely legal across the country, and I think that it should be, but they think that they can use that as a way to force churches into kind of a acceptable behavior, which is, for me, horrific. So, I mean, while I support gay marriage, I definitely am extremely critical and, I guess, suspicious of their motive. I mean, even something that I agree with the left on, technically, I still have to watch out because the reasons why they do things are just as important as the idea behind it as well.
Right, and this country was founded on religious liberty, and that's a fear of mine as well. I mean, you may have a Christian church that has a moral disagreement with gay marriage, and are they going to be forced now to perform gay marriages? They'll shut down. A lot of them will close down before they'll be forced to go against their conscience. Another issue, abortion. I mean, and we've seen with Obamacare where, you know, there's this push now for, and you know, for Catholic churches and Christian organizations and Christian-owned businesses. They're being forced now to provide free, quote-unquote, free birth control and abortion coverage against their conscience. And it's just an all-out assault on liberty. So, yeah, I mean, I guess what I'm saying is I agree, you know, the left is always about an agenda. It's always about imposing their will on other people. Whereas you and I may have a disagreement on how we feel about gay marriage, but we may agree, okay, well, it's a states' right issue. And if people, if it's put on an initiative, and I'm not saying you do, I'm just, this is just an example. If it's put on an initiative or it's put on a ballot and people go out and vote, that vote should be respected, and if the other side doesn't like the way that vote goes, well, you know what? Get your message together, put it out there, maybe in 2 more years try again and see if you can change people's minds. But you certainly shouldn't commit violence and crime against other people because they believe in traditional marriage and they vote accordingly or they gave money to an organization that supports that. And I think that's the difference.
I would agree with that statement. It does bring us to the idea that the majority always rules, and it seems to be a big populist left attitude right now, because their guy won, and that means that everything he believes, everybody believes. If you ever listen to him talk, which is painful, he always speaks as if he is in agreement with the majority. And because he's in agreement with the majority, his opinion is correct. Unfortunately for him, consensus does not equate to being right. You can be in the majority even if he isn't in the majority, which he is not on several issues, gun control, and I would say the healthcare bill as well. But he definitely likes to speak that way, and you find a lot of people on the left using that tactic. I would rather just, you know, be honest about it. If I'm in the minority, that doesn't make my argument any less valid. But I can accept that most people disagree with me. I'm fine with that.
Right. And that again is the difference. And you know, one other thing, Robert, another point I wanted to make, because as you were speaking about, you know, getting back to the capitalism and rich people not paying their fair share, which is such a joke anyway. I mean, they pay the most more taxes than anybody else. But, you know, I think one of the things that I find very repulsive about the left is that they exploit human frailty, human weakness for their own political gain. So, you know, feelings of jealousy and envy. Instead of saying to people, you know, this is America and you can rise above your circumstances. We don't have a caste system here like in India. You know, we don't have, you know, permanent classes. Anybody, doesn't matter what your station in life is when you're born, if you work hard, if you're smart, you can succeed and you can, I mean, I have so many examples of that in my own family, but they don't do that. because in order to control people, they've got to make them feel like this person over there, this rich guy that's worked hard. And that's another thing about
keeping
the quote-unquote rich. Exactly. This man is keeping
you
down. And the thing that's lost in the conversation is in this country, you know, rich people, many, many rich people were formerly poor people. A lot of them came from poverty. Many of them went bankrupt several times. Nobody wants to talk about the jobs that they create for other people to give them an opportunity to earn money and advance their careers. So, you know, that's another thing that's lost in the narrative, I believe.
Oh, purposely. Definitely.
So.
And that's part of the problem. We're losing the narrative because their arguments are basically supported by everything, pop culture, music, even video games. It doesn't really matter what the field of media is. It doesn't matter because everybody likes to agree with the same false premises, and that's where I believe we need to really get organized. I'm kind of on the minority as far as what my belief about the publishing industry. I think that our best tactic is not necessarily to self-publish, which I still support a lot of great writers who do that. But I think that what we need to do is we need to counter the left in everything. We need conservative or right-leaning publishers that, you know, can actually, I guess, take the opportunity. We have an opportunity before us. We have all these right-leaning writers and poets and essayists, and they're going to waste because the left has blacklisted them in the publishing industry and in Hollywood. And we have such an opportunity to win the day. I mean, there's no competition in the publishing industry right now, which is, again, why they're failing. And if we can get conservative and libertarian writers together, I think that we can actually, you know, make a lot of money, which is a good thing, and actually maybe change the conversation in the country.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. And you know what? Let me just say, Robert, I meant to say Jamie K. Wilson. I was looking at her Twitter handle. Not Jamie K.
No
worries. Jamie K. Wilson. And you know, she's and since I met you and her, I mean, you guys are doing some amazing things. So why don't we talk about what you know, the writing community that's sort of taking shape on Twitter and on social media. Let's talk a little bit about that and the kinds of things that you guys are doing, because I agree with you 100%. And one of the things, and we talked about this last week on the Twitter chat, and I want you to expand upon it, is that, you know, my feeling is that, you know, these wealthy donors who waste their money on the Republican Party, their money would be better invested in things like supporting conservative authors, maybe starting a publishing company and giving voice to all these authors that you're talking about. And even, you know, and I would also submit other artists. You know, Ava Afton is one of my favorite singers. I mean, she's amazing. People at Madison Rising, another great band. Anybody in that realm of entertainment that loves the Constitution and loves this country really needs the help. And so it's frustrating to me that we have people of means on our side who are still in that old mindset of giving to the Republican Party. And let's face it, the Republican Party can't tell a narrative to save their life. So I want you to talk a little bit about that.
Oh, definitely. But first of all, let me just say I agree with you. They can't tell a story. And that's, again, the problem. It's not that we don't have good storytellers. It's just that we don't put as much, priority on it as we do things like results and you know, factual representations. But, you know, Jamie K. Wilson, you can follow her at Twitter on Jamie K. W-I-L. She's doing a lot. I kind of met her just by random. I was looking for people to join my writers network, which I had kind of created a little bit after the election. I had kind of figured out the problem that, you know, if you look at the exit polls, we lost the youth vote, we lost the black vote, we lost the Latino vote by vast majority. I just realized it's a cultural thing. So, if you'd like to go to her website, it's conservativefiction.com. She also has conservativefeminism.com. Both great websites, and something that I think everybody should check out. But again, what we are trying to do is collect all of our writers together, our aspiring writers as well, because, I mean, they're going to be the future of the movement. And we're trying to give them a place where they can develop their skills, network with publishers who are eager for their business. There's a lot of good publishers out there. Freedom Forge Press is a good place. Bain, B-A-E-N, publishing. They're really great with libertarian writing. They do a lot of hard science fiction, military science fiction, books like that. And, you know, they're kind of pushing the envelope on what is acceptable in the publishing world. And another great group, which is also the one that Jamie Wilson works with, is Liberty Island Press. You can visit their website, libertyislandmag.com. So there are resources that we can use, and if we just, you know, pool our resources together, we can actually make a difference. And that's kind of the idea that I had, and I found out, thankfully, that I'm not the only one with that idea. I met Jamie by just writing random conservative publishers, and she ended up having the same exact idea as I did, a little bit different. And you know, we've gone into Google to make these little Google groups where our different writers and editors and publishers can chat with each other, and I think that's so important. Networking is kind of overlooked by a lot of writers. They don't know what to do to get their voice out there. And that's essential, especially if you're going to do self-publishing in the first place. You need to have a constant presence. You have to have thousands of people listening to what you're saying on a daily basis, so that when you do come out with a good book that you self-publish, you have a built-in audience.
Absolutely. That is so true. I know from my own experience. Now, Robert, are these publishing companies you mentioned, Bain and Freedom Forge Press and LibertyIslandMag.com, are these traditional publishing companies, or are they new media? You can tell us about them.
Bain is more of a traditional company. But, I mean, they're all companies that want to have hard copy books and hard copy magazines. In that way, they are traditional. But at the same time, they definitely do e-publishing as well, which is really big right now. And I think...
Yeah.
With e-publishing, I'm definitely more towards the self-publishing side. I think that you can maybe do a lot in that respect. But I think that having an actual publisher...
Oh, sorry about that. Go ahead.
No worries. I think having an actual publisher is very important, because, you know, people will look at the content of what that publisher is making, putting out. And they'll say, well, I think that they always produce a certain amount of quality, and I'm going to check out these books. You know, with self-publishing, sometimes it can be, well, this kind of looks interesting, but I'm not sure. I've never heard of this writer before. There's nobody else on their publishing team that I like or know of. So I'm not sure if this is going to be a good investment of my time or money. And I think that's my only big problem with self-publishing. It's just, you have to spend so much time doing the footwork, and if you don't do the footwork, you really can't complain that nobody bought your book. And, you know, there are some methods I'd love to talk about Twitter specifically, because a lot of people think that you just sign on Twitter and immediately you have a 10,000 followers, and it really doesn't work that way. You actually have to go out of your way to learn the tricks and basically the environment. You have to use hashtags, which are really interesting, really annoying, but they're essential if you're going to get your word out there. Because Twitter's like a chat room. But unfortunately, if you have 50 followers, they might never see anything that you say all day long. And so you have to use the hashtags, and you have to find the right hashtags, because you can't just make up your own, especially if you don't have any followers. And you have to actually go and look for people who have who share your same interests. So, like, the majority of people I follow are people who are conservative or libertarian, or there's, you know, people I like. I do follow a couple people who don't follow me back, but I don't care. Like the Mystery Science Theater 3000 guys, I'm a fan, so I'm gonna follow them no matter what. It doesn't matter if they follow me back ever. That's just something that I enjoy. But you have to really be careful too, because you can only follow, like, I think 300 to 500 people a day, and you have to make sure that you are careful about who you follow, because if you follow the wrong person, they could report you and you could get your account suspended. So if you say anything controversial, it's not necessarily protected, even though you didn't say anything necessarily vile or...
or threatening, against, yeah.
Yeah, and that happens a lot. That's why...
Yeah, I've spent time in the gulag, Robert. I'm familiar with that. Simply for telling somebody the truth.
That's why the Twitter Gulag Defense Network, hashtag TGDN, is so important, because it does teach you how not to get caught in that trap. Because, you know, you might think you're having a nice conversation with someone who just disagrees with your point of view, and then the next morning when you try to sign on to Twitter, you can't do it, and you're like, well, what happened? And Twitter tells you that you were acting irresponsibly, and usually the truth is that the other person was. And it's unfortunate that, you know, people have to silence their people who disagree with them in this format, but it is something that you have to be thinking about. And as I said before, if you don't have a couple thousand people on Twitter who like you and will be open to anything that you put out there, you're not going to get your voice heard on Twitter. So if you just have like 20 followers, don't expect anybody to pass on any of those Amazon links that you have. I wrote a new book. Okay, well, nobody knows, because none of those 20 people were on Twitter at that time, so they don't know that you said that in the first place. You have to really get your voice out there, and it does take a little bit of time, and it does take a little bit of work, but it is worth it.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Because, again, I've met so many great people on Twitter, and, again, if you use it right, it can be an extremely good tool for networking.
Oh, sure can. And, you know, that's one of the reasons, one of the many reasons why I started the RightStream Twitter chat. I mean, that's a hashtag RightStream. And because by having, you know, I use it a lot all week long, and obviously it centers around writing and authors and books, but by having that chat once a week and featuring an individual author or writer each week, you know, as they're getting retweeted and they're interacting, it helps make more impressions on them, and it does help build your followers. And the thing is, the other piece of this Twitter puzzle is that, you know, there's engagement versus broadcasting, and you really have to understand the difference between the two. And 90% of what you're doing should be engagement. You should be interacting with other people. As an author, I never got out there and said, oh, buy my book. You don't even know if the person you're talking to is even interested in the genre that you're writing in. You know, I think the whole idea is to build relationships. And I talked to, I think it was author M.V. Freeman a couple of weeks ago, and she was cracking up because I said, it's the same thing. You have to compare it to if you went to a business card exchange and you walked up to somebody and without even saying, hello, how are you, what's your name, or whatever, you just go and introduce yourself and then you start running off your mouth about everything you do. Well, that person's going to be completely turned off. So I agree. The hashtags, you know, and for anybody listening who's not familiar with Twitter, hashtag is just basically like subject matter or an interest. So, you know, and so anytime you use that hashtag, you're going to attract other people that have that same interest. But by the same token, it should also be about trying to build those relationships online and broadcasting some of the time. But really, I think most of the time you should be engaging and trying to learn about other people and share information back and forth that's helpful, you know, just like Jamie's, you know, and your writers group does.
Oh, and the other thing about hashtag is it's the pound sign from the phone. So that's what you need to do. So get onto Twitter, and that's what it is. It's a little pound sign. So
right.
Because
exactly.
Because when I first heard hashtag, I'm like, what the hell is that? What is
that?
Again, like, I had been completely I had no interest in Twitter whatsoever. My wife is the one who put me on Facebook in the first place. And, you know, I was like, I had a Facebook before. She's like, no, that was MySpace. I'm like, well, what's the difference? So, you know, I definitely disdain certain aspects of social media because, again, I don't like the idea that we have to be so narcissistic that everybody needs to, you know, look at me. But what I've used Twitter as is, again, a way to build relationships. I meet new people. I do say things, you know, out there. I put my voice out there and I put my message out there. But I always invite, you know, people to join in the conversation. I want to talk to new people. I want to meet new people. And that's a great thing. Like, I'm an unpublished author, but, you know, all sorts of people are interested in my writing all of a sudden. And I'm like, oh, well, maybe I'm better than I thought I was because, you know, after, like, the first 15 rejections from, you know, mainstream publishers, you start, you know, doubting yourself, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, writers, I think, we're sensitive by nature anyway because you're so close to your own material. So, I understand how that feels. And, I mean, I was one of those people back in 2008 because I was – at the time I was writing my book, I was editing a book for another friend of mine, my client as well. And I saw her jumping through all of these hoops, just trying to get a literary agent, trying to go the traditional route. And I thought to myself, you know, this isn't for me. I'm self-publishing. And you know, she ended up doing that too. And she built a whole brand around her book, which is, you know, women's health and wellness book. But so I think, you know, I agree with you in some ways about self-publishing. I do think the stigma is kind of going away. It's not gone completely. Certainly,
it's closer because of Amazon.
Yes, that's true. And
because,
people,
I mean,
write reviews and... Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, that's so helpful because, you know, Kia Heavey wrote a book called Night Machines. I think we talked to her on the Twitter chat, and we, you know, she's such a great writer. And again, I said it before, she's 100 times better than Stephen King, anything that Stephen King's done in the last 10, 15 years. And because, you know, she self-published, I worry that not enough people are going to know about what she's doing unless she makes it real big on Amazon, the Amazon bestseller list. So, you know, there's definitely aspects of it that I agree with and I like. I like the free spirit of it. But I definitely worry that it could be a bad marketing technique.
Yeah, I think it's important, and I agree with that. I mean, everything has its positives, you know, its advantages and its negatives, its disadvantages. I think with Amazon, the more reviews you have from real people reading the book, I certainly believe in, you know, I think blogging is a huge part of success with that also. And just in general, you know, just in writing, whatever you're doing. I mean, I'm also a blogger, editor, ghostwriter. I'm ghostwriting a book right now, and... You know, going to be up against, you know, should we try to get a literary agent or should we just go the self-publishing route? And I'm kind of preparing for both things. But I still would say with the advent of new media, I still think it's a net positive because these voices wouldn't be heard at all. You know, before new media, these gatekeepers were just like, you know, we don't like the themes of your book. It's too pro-American or whatever it is. And then you're stuck. So at least now there's another avenue. You have to work at it, but at least it's there.
Well, the great thing about the, you know, our movement though is we are in a kind of an advantageous position because conservative writers are so few, and conservative and libertarian, you know, publishers are so few that when you get to meet them, there's more of a personal relationship between you and the publisher. They might say, "Well, I see a spark of something that I like in your book. I'm willing to work with you on it." If you send off a book to, you know, one of the big, you know, liberal publishers, most likely they're going to just send you a rejection letter. It's going to be nice, but it's going to be a form letter. And 1,000 other writers that month got the same exact form letter. They're not going to work with you. They're not going to help you on. If they see a spark of something good in your story and they're not willing to work with you because they can't. The conservative side of the issue, you know, these publishers are willing to work with you. Conservative editors are there for you, and they want to find the next big thing. And there's so few of us that they actually have the time to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. And I don't know why, you know, and how we can attract, you know, getting back to the donors and the people who have the wherewithal to start a publishing company. What are your thoughts on trying to sort of influence these people to say, hey, you know what, that's a great idea, and my money is better spent on an effort like this than it is in donating to the Republican Party?
Well, I think that the idea is a winning idea. So my big thing is that we just need to keep on getting the idea out there. If you can put the message out there and it's a good idea, you're gonna get people interested. And you know, if I could, you know, have a conversation with the Koch brothers right now and tell them, hey, listen, we're doing something that's gonna be a lot more effective in the long run and saving the country than anything that you did with you know, the millions of dollars that you gave to Mr. Romney. So.
Right. Let's talk about Robert. As you were speaking again, I thought of the two Atlas Shrugged films that have come out, and I just want to talk about the importance of quality and also the importance of supporting, you know, once a libertarian or a conservative producer, writer, you know, puts something out there, like a film like Atlas Shrugged, I think about the importance of supporting them. Now, a lot of people complained. I thought the first one was really good. I liked it. I didn't see anything wrong with the production values. I know a lot of people complained about that. But, you know, what are your thoughts on that? I've had people say, you know, you can't just support something just because it's conservative or libertarian. It has to be good quality, which I agree with. I happen to think that movie was really good, and it was a shame that I don't think it got the full support that it really deserved. But what are your thoughts about that?
Well, I mean, everybody's going to have different tastes, too, so you have to consider that. I mean, we are talking about something that is very subjective. Like, I mean, there's a lot of things that books that I love that other people might think are complete trash, you know. But so as far as that goes, and same thing with movies. I've seen a lot of movies that were definitely not big in the mainstream. But as far as, you know, just putting out whatever, we definitely should do our best to filter objectively, you know, because, again, I don't think that we have to be, you know, overbearing with our message. We don't have to write, you know, chapter mm-hmm. one of our my fiction novel, how, you know, gun control. Yeah. we can tell great stories with our viewpoint, because, I mean, mm-hmm. if you believe that self-defense is an inherent right, or that freedom of speech is worth dying for. I mean, you can write an entire novel in that universe with that idea overhanging. You don't have to just shove it in people's face. And you know, with I didn't see the movie, and I still have not read the book. I couldn't get into it. But the idea that such a major conservative, you know, and libertarian book, which, you know, is beloved by so many of us, was going to get a fair shake at all. I mean, in this industry, it wasn't going to happen. I mean, I imagine all the critics pretty much decided from the beginning what they were going to say about the movie without even watching it. So
exactly.
I mean, you definitely have to be, you know, a little bit watchful, but you also have to you have to realize that the field that we're going into is already enemy territory. They own Hollywood. They own the critics. Mm-hmm. When the leftists own both the people who make the movies and the people who criticize the movies, then you know that you're in for a fight. A lot of times I've seen of the more conservative movies, like 300, for instance, that was kind of...
Oh, I love that, yeah.
Yeah, it was very, very popular. I mean, people love this movie, but the critics, pretty much the vast majority of them, hated it and complained about the message, because apparently freedom is of only a right a right leaning topic these days. And there's so many subjects that I would think, you know, good versus evil, it would be able to be everywhere. Like, I mean, I think that liberals and conservatives together would be able to say, well, yeah, that guy right there was trying to destroy an entire race of people. Let's all agree that that's a bad thing. But or this group is just invading their country because they wanted to enslave the populace. Can we at least agree that that's a bad thing?
Well,
but sometimes apparently – I'm sorry, go ahead.
Not when one of your heroes is Margaret Sanger, then you don't really necessarily think that way. Then you think maybe it's okay to want to wipe out certain groups of people. And I'm not saying everybody on the left feels that way, but I'm sorry. You know, it just reminded me. You know, they idolize this woman. And here, talk about telling a story, Robert. And I'm sorry, I'm going to go off on another tangent here. But
oh, no. Talk about how she spoke in front of the women's KKK.
Yeah. I mean, this woman manipulated black ministers for the nefarious purpose of wiping out the black race with her organization called Planned Parenthood. And not just the black race, anybody with a handicap. I believe Jews and Italians were also on her, you know, unworthy to live list. I mean, and this is a woman that is lionized by the left. They think she's wonderful. So I'm not so sure that their disagreement with a movie like 300 is, I'm not so sure that that's something we would all be able to agree with, because apparently they think that's okay. I mean, and in terms of Kermit Gosnell, the Butcher of Philadelphia, who's just he's just the tip of the iceberg, you know, it was absolutely repugnant to me that there were more people there were so many people who are more concerned about the abortion agenda than they were in exposing this evil, because God forbid people might get an idea of what abortion really is, and we can't have that.
Well,
and that was,
you know,
hilarious.
I noticed though, people were defending him before anything was even known.
Right.
I mean, they just jumped to defend their premise of their world is perfect, and any criticism is just propaganda from the right. You know, any scandal is just a figment of our imaginations. And I would like to change that, because if the average person shouldn't have to, I guess, start off on a false premise. I mean, whether it's the Iraq war, I mean, there's so many accepted myths right now about pretty much everything, and we have basically given up the fight. Every time you let somebody begin an argument with a false premise, and you don't challenge that premise, you're letting them win. You basically said, okay, I can see it. I can't tell you why taking a genocidal monster like Saddam Hussein out of power was a good idea. Are you serious? I mean, we have so many great arguments and so many, you know, the truth
right.
is the greatest argument of all.
Amen to that. Yes, absolutely. And again, you know, here I go beating up on the GOP again, but they deserve it. They just won't do it. And they buy into these false premises. And just getting back to Gosnell for a moment, I wrote a blog post about what a missed opportunity that was for the GOP. Here we have an opportunity to beat back against the false war on women meme, right? Women died. We can beat back against the false charges of racism that are always leveled against the Republican Party, because Gosnell had much higher standards for his white patients than he did for his black ones.
And bureaucratic incompetency.
Yes, exactly. I could also, and I've argued it many times, we had a quote-unquote pro-choice moderate governor, Tom Ridge, who relaxed the standards in Pennsylvania, even though and there was zero to very little to no oversight on them. I personally know a doctor, and he doesn't want his name disclosed, so I won't say it on the air, but I know a doctor who works at the University of Pennsylvania who called the state of Pennsylvania many, many, many times over the years, and they did zero about it, nothing about Gosnell. So, I mean, there's so many aspects to that story that was just a blown opportunity from the GOP, which, again, just solidifies the point you're making about the importance of people like you and I, conservatives and libertarians, banding together and starting to tell these stories and finding people and encouraging people that have the money to support us.
Well, they can invest in us because, again, as I said before, we have such an opportunity. The left has set the bar for entertainment so very, very low that it's only our fault if we don't take it. I mean, as I said, I'm not a published writer, but I love writing. I've had some, you know, interest in the stories that I've already put out there and the story ideas that I have, and I'm going to keep on working on it. But I don't just this isn't about me. This is about the movement, and I want to get as many people as possible who, you know, even if you just write creative writing in your spare time just for fun, for all you know, it could be professional quality writing or not far from it. And I just want to get those people's attention as much as possible.
Yep. Well, gosh, Robert, you know what? The time has gone by so fast. It's already 2:00, so I'm going to have to bring
this
to a close.
Have fun with Sheena.
Well, listen, before we go, though, just remind everybody about your blogs and where they can find you on Twitter and anywhere else.
They can. My blog is thankyoucapitalism.blogspot.com. You can find me on Twitter at tycapitalism. And if you're looking for my Google group, go to Google and put in Conservative Libertarian Writers Network, and we will invite you in. So.
Great. And Robert, let's put a real quick plug in for the Armed Citizens Project, too. Let everybody know where they can find out more about that.
You can visit the website, armedcitizensproject.org. It's a really great charity, nonprofit. None of us are paid for what we're doing. We are giving free shotguns and training to people who pass a background check and are in need of self-defense tools. And that's what they are. They're tools. And we would, you know, love your support, your volunteer. And, you know, we're all over Houston, Tucson, Detroit, Chicago, and Baltimore. So, you know, the more support we get, the easier it gets to arm these people. We've already armed well over 24 single women, and we're in the process of arming our first complete neighborhood, and we're doing a lot of good stuff.
Fantastic. Well, Robert, thank you so much for joining me today, and I'll see you on Twitter.
Okay, have a great day.
Take care.
Bye.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that was Robert Bertrand. Check out his blog, thankyoucapitalism.blogspot.com. We will be back in a few moments here. I'm going to take a quick commercial break, but we will be back in a few moments with my next author, Sheena Freitas.
Hi, this is Lisa Tarvis. I'm a metaphysician, board-certified holistic health practitioner, energy healer, intuitive, and the author of the book, Just Believe. I'm also a host on the RightStream Network. My radio show is called Just Believe and airs every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern. Please stop by my website at www.lisatarvis.com. That's LISATARVES for details on all the services I offer, information on my book, and my radio show. There are many amazing guests and fascinating topics scheduled for the show in the upcoming months. I look forward to connecting with you soon.
I'll never get used to these 10-mile runs. They are taking so much time out of my day.
Are you training for a marathon or something?
Diabetes runs in my family, and I heard if you lose lots of weight, you can prevent it. So I started running like crazy, and I cut my calories big time.
Oh, get real. You don't have to knock yourself out to prevent diabetes. My doctor said it's the small lifestyle changes you make that matter, because it's easier to stick to them.
Wow, really?
It worked for me. 6 months ago, I started walking a lot and I stopped eating the fried stuff. I've lost 10 pounds. My doctor said I'm doing great.
I'll have to ask my doctor about this. I'd love to get my life back.
Talk to your healthcare provider. Losing a small amount of weight by being active 30 minutes, 5 days a week, and eating healthier can prevent type 2 diabetes. To get your free game plan for preventing type 2 diabetes, call 1-800-438-5383. This is a message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the National Diabetes Education Program.
Hi, this is Jennifer Coolidge. The American Heart Association says the disco song Stayin' Alive is the near-perfect beat for hands-only CPR. If you see a teen or adult collapse from cardiac arrest, you only need 2 steps to help save a life. Call 911 and push hard and fast in the center of the chest to the beat of the song Stayin' Alive. Disco is back and it's saving lives. To learn more, go to heart.org/hands-only-CPR.
Nationally supported by the WellPoint Foundation.
Hi, this is Daria Ann, author and founder of the RightStream Radio Network. If you're an author, writer, blogger, or just someone who enjoys reading and learning, I hope you'll tune in to our inspiring, insightful, and educational programs. Every Sunday, join author and metaphysician Lisa Tarvis for Just Believe at 1 p.m. Eastern, when she explores a variety of spiritual topics, including alternative healing modalities. A gifted intuitive from a young age, Lisa's book, entitled Just Believe, chronicles her journey from a childhood of seeing and communicating with angels to a career in which she uses her talents to help others emotionally, spiritually, and physically. Each week, she interviews experts in the fields of personal growth, spiritual development, and alternative medicine. Military Mondays with author and military historian John D. Gresham analyzes current events and issues from the perspective of the United States military. Tune in at 1 p.m. Eastern every Monday when John, author of such books as Uncommon Valor and journalist for the Defense Media Network, interviews accomplished guests on important topics like national security and defense and global terrorism. RightStream Tuesdays with Daria Ann airs at 1 p.m. Eastern and welcomes authors in diverse genres, including romance, drama, military history, spirituality, and politics. We also speak social, discussing the benefits and pitfalls of social media platforms and the numerous and plentiful publishing formats now available with various experts in order to help other authors navigate through new technology to reach higher levels of success. During every broadcast, we welcome your calls at 347-945-7246. And, of course, the chat room is always open. Can't listen live? No worries. Just go to blogtalkradio.com/rightstream to listen to the archives. And be sure to join us for our weekly Thursday RightStream Twitter chat at 11 a.m. Eastern using the hashtag RightStream on Twitter. Rejoice in the flow of creativity with the RightStream Radio Network and the RightStream Twitter chat.
Okay, and we are back, and this is your host, Daria Ann, and I'm so excited to welcome just a prolific writer and author to the second half of RightStream. Her name is Sheena Freitas. I hope I said her last name correctly, and I'm sure she'll correct me here in a moment if I haven't. But she is a writer of young adult and fantasy novels. She's a fabulous blogger. She has a wonderful website. I can't wait to talk to her about this, too. And I will go ahead and put a link to it again in the chat room. But without further ado, I want to welcome to RightStream Tuesday author, writer, blogger, Sheena Freitas. Hey, Sheena.
Hi.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing really good. How are you?
Great. And thank you so much for taking time out of your day to join me. Can you hear me, Sheena?
Not a problem. Yeah.
Okay. Well, listen, you know what I'd like to do is just, first of all, just give you an opportunity in your own words to introduce yourself to the audience, and then we'll go ahead and talk about your books and your work and your blogging and social media and all kinds of good stuff.
All right. I'm Sheena Freitas. I write young adult fantasy novels at the moment, and I also have a collection of short stories out. I'm also the publisher at Paper Crane Books, and we publish fantasy and young adult fiction over there.
Wow, that is fabulous. Now, Sheena, tell us a little bit about yourself. Like, now, do you do this full-time?
Yeah.
That's phenomenal. Did you always want to write when you were younger? Like, tell us a little bit about yourself and growing up. Did you keep journals? Did you always want to be an author?
Well, I tried to keep a diary, but that didn't really work out well. I think I've been writing since, like, I've been really young, maybe 8 or something. I've always dabbled here and there. But, you know, I was like, well, I guess I want to be a writer. And then, you know, you grow up and you're like, well, maybe I don't want to be a writer. Maybe I want to be something else, like a marine biologist or...
Well, you know, it's funny, the old story is, you know, with writing, too, and even with acting, anything having to do with the entertainment industry, it's kind of like don't quit your day job. And so I interview, you know, the authors I interview, many of them do have day jobs and they write on the side. Others have been able to make it a full-time career. So, you know, kudos to you that you've been able to do that. What attracted you to the young adult fantasy genre?
Well, I'm a Harry Potter generation kind of person. So I grew up with Harry Potter. And at first I was like, oh, you know, Harry Potter, it's going to be a fad. You know, that's not going to last long. So and I kept avoiding reading the books. And then finally we had a book fair at my school. So I bought the first one. It was buy one, get one free. So I ended up getting the second one for free. And I came home with it. And I looked at it, and I was like, well, I'll give it, like, a couple chapters. And if I don't like it, you know, whatever. And I started reading. And then I was hooked by the end of the first chapter. And I was like, oh, my gosh, this is so amazing. So I devoured the first book. I started reading the second. I think I locked myself in my room for the weekend reading the first two books. And then I was like, I have to get the third book. And then my parents got me the third book, thankfully. And I just, it was like Harry Potter mania from there. And then I was looking and I was like, you know, that's, after Harry Potter was done and over with, I was like, I would really, really like more fantasy, something like that, but like not too hardcore, not like Lord of the Rings where it's like super long and epic and it takes like, there's three books plus The Hobbit and it's like pages upon pages and different languages. I was like, that's fine, but it wasn't really for me. Then I read, I think I read Twilight, and it introduced me to young adult books, and I thought, why not write something like that? So I tried it, and I went with it.
Sure. So now tell us, now your first book was The Chosen, is that correct?
Yes.
And so how long, let's talk a little bit about the process. So you were inspired by Harry Potter and then Twilight, and you kind of got some ideas from reading those books, and that was the direction you wanted to go. So when did The Chosen come out, and what was the process of writing that like? You know, in terms of writing it, editing, getting it published, that kind of thing.
The Chosen was interesting. It actually originated from a dream I had. I was 14 at the time, and it was like I had this one dream. I was like, well, that was interesting. I didn't really think about it. And then, like, that the second night I went to sleep, and it, like, picked up exactly where it left off. And like,
wow.
Yeah, it never happened before, and it never happened since then. It just, like, picked up right where it left off, and it just, like, continued the story. And I kept thinking about it, like, the next day. I was like, that's interesting. And I went back to sleep the next night, and it picked up again. And I was like, well, I have to write this down. So I finally sat down and probably skipped out on social studies notes that day, and I started writing it. And unfortunately, the dream didn't continue, so I had to make up how it was going to continue on. And I started from there. I was in high school when I started writing it. So, like, for about 4 years, I was writing it off and on between studies and being a teenager. And then after I graduated, I decided I'm going to finish this, because I really want to see this published. So I buckled down, I finished it, and then I started looking for agents, got rejected, studied some more on, like, how to write blurbs, pitching, and then finally, after I don't know how many rejections, my dad was talking to our neighbor, and he brought up Lulu, a self-publishing venue.
Oh, yeah.
And at the time, I was like, I'm not really sure about self-publishing. I was like, aren't those books, like, really awful or something? And so I decided to go for it, but it wasn't really polished as well as I would have liked it to be. I would have liked to have it gone through, like, a professional editing process. So I kept looking around, and I happened upon, I think it was Michelle Franklin, and she said that she was with a small publisher, and why not check it out? So I submitted to them, and they picked me up, and I thought, wow, that's awesome. And it went through the whole editing process. We went through the publishing thing, but then they closed down, I think, within few months or something. I can't remember what the whole reason was, but they shut down. And I was like, well, I can do a lot of the stuff that they can do. I polished my editing, and I knew how to design because I'd been, like, doing God knows how much designing work. It was, like, a huge hobby. So I was like, well, I'll try to do this whole self-publishing thing again. And I wanted to do, like, an imprint service, like, just have, like, my imprint name or something for my books. But then one of the authors that were with the small publisher that I was with, she just said, well, why not open up your own small press? And they had nowhere to go, so I took them in, and here we are now.
Fantastic. Oh, my gosh. You know, you're so impressive, Sheena, for such a young age, what you've accomplished. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So that was The Chosen. So when was this actually published and available in the marketplace? Was it a few years back? Or?
It was a couple years ago.
Okay. Now, this is the first, and is this a trilogy? I know there's two books. I know the second book is The Number. Is that the
mm-hmm.
final book, or is there a third one coming?
There's a third one coming. I'm, like, in the middle of the first draft right now.
Okay. And, you know, I'm fascinated by authors who are able to write trilogies. When you first sat down to write The Chosen, was that in your mind that you were going to write a series? Or how did that play out, you know, as you were writing the book?
I had no idea it was going to be a series, honestly. I was just like, I'm just going to write this. And for the longest time, I had no idea how it was going to end. I can't remember how, but I finally came up with this idea. I was like, okay, this is how it's going to end. I was like, but if it's going to end this way, then her journey isn't going to be completely over. And in order to complete her journey, there's going to have to be subsequent books. And that's when the idea for The Number came in. And when I started writing The Number, I was like, why stop at a sequel? Let's just make it a trilogy. I was like, trilogies seem to be popular anyway right now, so.
Yes, they are. Now, are you bringing back, is this the same main character that reappears in all three books, Sheena?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Great. So what are some of the themes? I mean, I don't want to give away the story or anything like that, but what are some of the themes, you know, with your character? What are some of the points that you try to get across in your book through this fantasy?
Well, she learns about who she is and where she stands in the world. She's like this really weak 14-year-old girl in the beginning, and she loses everybody that she knows. And then she's thrust into this whole other world, and the gods of that planet tell her, we've decided to choose you to save us. And, you know, after losing her family, after being thrust away from the only place that she's known as home, she's suddenly, like, in this new world, and she doesn't really know how to grasp it. Like, she knows she has to do the right thing, but at the same time, she doesn't really want to do it because she doesn't think she has the capability to do it. So the first book is really all about that. And then in the second book, she finally really comes into her own, and she takes on leadership qualities, and she's like, all right, we're going to do this. They said that I'm supposed to save them, so I'm going to save them.
Well, and you know, Sheena, it's so funny. Even though this is fiction or fantasy, you know, it sounds like very relatable. I think that most people, and especially teenagers or people, you know, we've all been, even if you're an adult, you've been a teenager. I think we can relate to having those kinds of insecurities as human beings and really having to overcome them. I mean, in her case, obviously, it's a fantasy, but it's a great way to make those points.
I agree, totally.
So now I want to talk about, I absolutely love your blog. You do a phenomenal job with this website. How important is that now? How important is that to a writer? You know, would you say having a blog and the marketing side of things?
I wasn't really sure about it at first. You know, I was always in a blogging community before I decided to become a writer. So it was just like this little natural thing that I wanted to do. I was like, when I start writing, I really don't want to lose blogging altogether. So I just like sort of rebranded and redid it, and it just kind of morphed into what it is now.
Well, it's phenomenal. I mean, you have all your books there. Now, you also have a collection of short stories as well, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, tell us a little bit about those. Are they also in the same realm of fantasy, or what are the short stories about?
The short stories are really eclectic. Some of them, I think there might be one fantasy story in there. I can't remember, or maybe I left it out. But all the stories in that collection were written when I was a teenager in high school. I had a creative writing class in my senior year. So my creative writing teacher introduced me to the world of flash fiction, which is essentially fiction that you're supposed to squeeze onto an index card. And I was like, that's not possible. There's no way anyone can write a story that short. And I managed to do it. And I got really hooked to it. I was like, wow, this is really amazing. Because you have to write, you have to capture a story in like this really brief scene. And it's a wonderful, wonderful exercise because it teaches you brevity. It teaches you how to really focus on the important details. And you can also be kind of poetic with it, which is really fun. And so those are the kinds of stories that are in that collection. You have like some drama, you have some humor, you have some that are just kind of out there.
Yeah, well, that's fantastic. And I agree with you. You know, it's kind of like a Twitter hashtag. When a hashtag gets going and you want to be witty and sharp and you're limited by the characters, and I think it is a very good discipline to really hone in on your message and what you're trying to get across. So I agree with you on that. Now, I know on your blog you have you say you provide freelance services to authors. What are some of those services? How does that work?
I do some proofreading for them. I also provide formatting for ebook or for a POD service like CreateSpace or Lightning Source. I think that's it.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I also offer to do book covers. So I will design a book cover if need be.
Excellent. Well, that's really good to know. Now, Sheena, how do you feel about book trailers? Did you have those for your book? Do you think they're important?
I have one book trailer. I think they're interesting because it's really short, and if it's done well, it can really capture your attention. I remember I saw this one book trailer, and after watching it, I was like, I have to buy that book. Like, I didn't second guess it. I went out that day, and I think I bought that book, and then I read it. I was a little disappointed, the trailer was excellent. I was just like, wow, that's really good. And I think it can work as a marketing instrument for authors, but I don't think you need to have one because, you know, I think if you want to do a trailer, it has to be done really well anyway. And if you don't have the technology or if you don't know anyone who can, like, make you, like, a really nice one that kind of looks, you know, it does, and, like, it can be amateurish, but it doesn't have to be, like,
right,
so bad that it looks like it was put together in Microsoft Paint or something.
Yeah. No, and that would be one of those things, in my opinion, that if you're going to do it and you don't know how to do it yourself, then it's worth the investment of hiring somebody who doesn't know what they're doing, because you don't want to skimp on something like that. Because just like you said, that trailer was so great. It you went out and bought the book, and even though the book didn't live up to expectations, the trailer kind of did its job in getting you interested in the book. So, yeah, mm-hmm. I would agree with what you're saying. Absolutely. And I'm just looking at your blog here, Sheena. So now you're on Twitter. Is that your main, as far as social media, is that your main platform?
Yeah, I use Twitter. Mm-hmm.
And have you been able to connect with a lot of writers on there? Has it been helpful to you in your career?
It's been phenomenal. I've connected to not only just authors, but book bloggers and random readers. I was a little reluctant to join Twitter, but after seeing so many authors join, I was like, I guess I'll join it. And it's really fun.
Yeah, it is. I was talking about that with my first guest today, and you know, just having the ability to understand the hashtags and how they work, though, and really engaging with other people, I think is so important, and really developing those relationships, and especially for writers, because I think that sometimes we tend to be kind of in our own worlds, and I think having mm-hmm. that community, even if it's online, it leads to real relationships and friendships, and can actually assist you in kind of getting to the next level of your career. Have you felt that's been the case for you?
What was that?
Have you felt that that's been helpful, you know, for you, Twitter,
yeah.
as far as your success?
yeah, I mean, I love saying that this is, I'm right, that hashtag am writing, you know?
Yeah.
And,
great.
You know, if you ask, you usually get feedback. And as a writer, I think that's really important because it's a really isolating career. You know, you're just kind of isolated in your own little corner all by yourself. So it's really nice to be able to have, like, that kind of like a support group.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Now, Sheena, do you, aside from Twitter, I mean, do you participate in any writers' groups, you know, where you're actually meeting on a regular basis with other writers and critiquing and receiving criticism on your work?
No, I don't actually. I know some people say that they really benefit from that, and I think that's great, but I'm kind of reclusive, I guess. Like, when I'm writing my first draft, I don't want anyone to ever see it, like, ever. And then, finally, once I get to my second draft, I'm like, well, maybe, but usually by the time I'm done with my third draft, then I'm finally okay with letting, like, a couple of people see it and critiquing me before publication, but, yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm with you. I've had authors on the show who've... There are definitely pros and cons to it. I think if you're going to belong to a writer's group, you really should check out a few because, you know, we're all human, and so people are not above petty jealousy. So you have to go to a group where the criticism is going to be constructive and balanced with here's where you can make it even better or stronger, not just about tearing you down as a writer. And I've heard some horror stories about that, too. And I'm actually kind of with you. I'm more of a loner when it comes to the work that I'm doing. But I do think if you're going to choose a writer's group and if that's the avenue you want to take, that you really should check out a few and be sure that the people there are all there to be supportive and not just critical.
And I also think that if you want to join a writer's group, you should make sure that the writing level is up to the par that you want to be, because if they're like at a lower writing level, they may or may not be able to catch everything that you want them to catch.
Great point. Absolutely. Now, I do have a question in the chat room, and he wants to know, this is my friend Robert, who was my first guest today. He wanted me to ask you if you're planning on doing the convention scene, Sheena.
I am, actually. I will be participating in my first Comic Con. It's a local Comic Con, but I'll be participating in that in October. I believe it's the end of October. So I'm really excited about that.
Excellent. Now, where is that going to be?
It's going to be held in Springfield, Ohio.
Okay.
It's a little city by Dayton.
Excellent. That's great. And I wanted to let everybody know while we're on the phone here, too, that, Sheena, you are also joining me, speaking of Twitter, you're joining me this Thursday for our WriteStream Twitter chat.
And I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. And I was talking with Robert, and I think, you know, you really have the marketing side down. I mean, I think, you know, there's a lot of writers out there who, you know, I'll give you an example. I mean, they're so talented and they're very successful, but the piece that a lot of times people miss out on is the marketing side and the ability to really articulate what your book is all about, whether it's on, you know, on internet radio or regular radio or in front of a crowd. And it's so important. Like a couple of years ago, I interviewed a woman who was very successful in the romance genre, had all of these great books under her belt, but she just didn't do a good interview. I mean, just didn't have the ability to get out and talk about her books. How do you feel about that? And do you ever go to, like, local, you know, book groups as a guest, you know, as a presenter, anything in your area?
I haven't been invited to any yet, but last year I went to a farmer's market, and that was, like, my first live, I guess, appearance. And I was there, like, pretty much the entire time it was going on. But it actually really helped because I really wasn't sure what to say or how to say something. But the people there, they were really friendly. They're a great group, and I think I'll be going there again this year. You know, they asked me questions, and I had to learn how to convey what my book was about in a concise manner that was that just made it seem really interesting for someone to say, okay, I'll give your book a try.
Right. Yeah, and it's so important. It's just like the creative writing exercise. You really have to hone in on your message. And, you know, it's funny, a few years ago I was on, there's a show on Blog Talk Radio called Blurb. And what they do, it's very interesting. Dr. Kent and Sally are the hosts. And in order to participate or to be even selected, possibly selected as a winner, as their author of the week, you have to submit an audio blurb to them about your book. I think it was, it might have been 2 minutes, or maybe it was 3 minutes. Maybe two, but, you know, so it really, and I remember I benefited so much from that exercise because it really helps you to kind of target and hone in on that message. So, you know, now with social media, we have Blog Talk Radio, we have Twitter. There's so many ways to get your message out there, you know, and it's just, it's incredible that we're living in an age of new media. But now, Sheena, are your books available in all formats, you know, paperback, ebook?
It's available in paperback and ebook right now. Hopefully audiobook sometime in the future.
Oh, that'll be fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you personally, how do you feel about, I mean, how do you feel about the ability to have an ebook? I mean, do you prefer to hold a book in your hand? You know, what's your preference as a reader?
I love holding books. I just like feeling them. I like, you know, being able to curl up with them. I wasn't a big fan of ebooks when I first heard about them. I was like, I don't know about this. And then I got an iPad, and I was like, well, I guess it's kind of convenient. I guess. But so many indie authors have just the ebook, and they don't have a paperback edition. So being able to read ebooks has really opened my eyes to other independent authors. Like, I was like, wow, this got rejected from, like, a traditional publisher. I don't know how that was possible.
Right. Yeah, and I remember back in 2008, and I did that. You know, I made mine available in Kindle and you know, all those different formats, and I thought, I don't really like this. But, I understand the appeal because if you're traveling, or even if you're not traveling, but you have the ability to have so many different books in one source. So I understand the convenience of it. But unlike you, I like to turn a page. I like to make notes. I like to highlight things that I like, you know, in a book. I do like that ability to hold a book in my hands. But as authors, we have to also cater to our market. And if there's a market out there that loves Kindle, then we're only hurting ourselves if we don't make our books available that way.
Exactly.
So now tell us about Sheena, about your website, because as Robert was saying, I mean, this website is so professional. How did you about building this? And, you know, what advice do you have for somebody who wants to try to create a website like this?
Well, web designing was like a huge hobby of mine when I was a teenager. So I kind of just sort of picked up how to build a website by myself. But if you want a if you want to try to do it yourself, I think Weebly might be a good place to start if you have no experience in web design or how or what HTML is. I think it's Weebly or Wix. You can
Wix.
And build and you can go there and you can build yourself a website. I would suggest going to something like I use Color Lovers. It's a colourlovers.com. They have these wonderful color palettes that you can choose from. Just kind of take a peek and look at all the different color palettes there. Because what you want to do is you want to make your website really simple, but you also want to make it pop. But a lot of people, or a lot of authors, they're not really artistic. So they don't, they'll use, a really bright red against, a bright blue font, and it's really hard to read. But if you go and pick out some of the colors at Color Lover, you'll see some really pretty color combinations that'll make your website pop. And everything should be, really nice and cohesive, and nothing will, contrast too sharply. So it's not, uber unreadable.
Yeah, and I'm looking at your website right now, and you've got a nice slider at the top with your different book covers and what everything is, and it's very easy to navigate. And so you built this yourself, Sheena. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Fantastic. You are multi-talented, I have to tell you.
Thank you.
Now, how often do you blog? I mean, as far as, you know, you have a blog on here. I'm clicking on the link right now. How important is that, and do you think that writers need to be blogging daily? You know, what are your thoughts about that?
Well, I think if you do it daily, that's a little overkill. I try to do it once or twice a week. You know, sometimes I think right now I'm doing a series for writers, but sometimes I'll have something fun for readers so that they can enjoy it. And I think if you do more fun posts like that, it'll allow readers to, like, see your personality, see how you write, and if they like it, they'll either follow your blog or they'll decide to take a peek at your books. So I think showcasing personality and using it as a way to showcase how you write in your writing style is a good way to keep a blog.
Yeah, excellent. I agree with that. And I like, you know, your latest, you have like a 10-part series here about Do You Know Your Audience? And, you know, I think sharing information that's valuable, that can be useful to other people, to other writers, is also a great way. And obviously, can you tell us a little bit about, I know it's a 10-part series, so you don't have to give the whole thing away, but what were some of the basic points you talked about in terms of writers needing to know their audience?
I found a lot of time independent authors had no idea. Like, they said, I'm writing a young adult book. And I was like, okay. And I would take a peek at their work, and it really wasn't young adult at all. It was either younger than young adult or it was adult, but they just didn't know it because they had this perception of what young adult was to them when they were a teen. And I was like, a lot has changed since then in the young adult industry, especially. Or, like, because some would just either, like, talk down. It sounded like they were talking down to the teenagers. And I was like, that sounds more like middle grade or children's. And I was like, you need to use, I was like, young adults, they're in high school. They can understand if you use a bigger vocabulary. You don't have to talk, you know? I mean, I was like, well, when I was in high school, we were analyzing Sylvia Plath poems and reading How to Kill a Mockingbird and Shakespeare. So, you know, give teens the benefit of the doubt and use the bigger vocabulary. Don't be afraid to use the bigger vocabulary. And there's also where they were, I think some people were making them a little too squeaky clean, and it kind of sounded a little, it didn't sound realistic. I was like, have you even read a young adult novel? And they're like, no, not really. But they're like, but I read Twilight or I watched Twilight. And I was like, oh, that's not really good enough because, you know, young adult novels now, some of them have sex, some of them have drugs, some of them will have cussing, but of course, you know, some of them can be violent, I guess sort of like Hunger Games. You know, you have kids being thrown into a battle royale for survival.
Right. This series was built around people who are writing to that young adult audience?
Initially it was, but then it became something where I just started breaking down genres and age categories. Actually, it's not finished yet. I'm supposed to be writing a blog post about horror this week, which will be fun.
Yeah. No, what are some of the, okay, regardless of the genre, would you say, are there certain principles that apply across the board in terms of knowing your audience? Like, what are some of the basic principles about that? Obviously, the specifics are going to change depending on the audience you're targeting, but what are some of the general principles about knowing your audience and connecting with them, would you say?
I think if you know your audience, you'll know how to market them properly. Because, like, if you're writing romance, like just straight romance, you're not going to go to, like, a comic convention and say, here's my books, because that's the totally wrong audience. I mean, sure,
right.
Some of them will be like, why not? But most of them are going to like fantasy and science fiction, whereas, you know, your more romance novel readers, they'll like, you might want to go to some place, I don't know, like maybe a floral shop, because I guess, yeah, like a floral shop, why not? You could go there, maybe have your book on consignment there. And maybe if a husband was walking in and to buy their wife some roses, they'll see your book and you never know.
Right. Right. So it sounds like that there are people out there that really need help with that, with really understanding who they're targeting and who their books to.
Mm-hmm.
And really focusing on that. Well, that's good. So, I love, I'm looking at your website now and it's so good. It really is. Now, are you on any other social media platforms, Sheena, besides Twitter?
I finally decided to take the plunge into Facebook. I still prefer Twitter.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I've started using Facebook a little bit more. I think there's a couple of writers groups on there that we share information, like where to market your books, links over here. So that's been kind of valuable for me. And sometimes you can find me on Tumblr.
And what about, now, do you ever use Pinterest? I had an author on, actually it was Miriam Cobras, couple of months ago, and she talked about how she used Pinterest to create storyboards about each of her books to generate interest.
I kind of messed with Pinterest a little bit, but I'm not on it enough to really, I think it's interesting, though, because you can make storyboards. One of my authors, she uses Pinterest as a marketing tool, and she uses it to post pictures of what her fantasy world would look like. I think it's really helped with her. It's really interesting.
Yeah, I got into it kind of fairly recently, maybe like a year, year and a half ago, and I never, you know, until I interviewed Miriam, I never thought about, wow, it is a great way to create storyboards. So I think with, you know, I'm ghostwriting a book for someone now, and I think I'm definitely going to use that social media avenue to help promote it. But I'm with you. I think Twitter is still my favorite. I initially started with Facebook. Well, I started with Facebook and Twitter at the same time, but I was more on Facebook. Now it's totally flipped, and I don't even really like Facebook much anymore. But it's important to be on there because other people are, and there are a lot of people on Facebook who are not on Twitter, so we have to sort of cover all these terms. Sheena, I got another question for you from the chat room. And you know what? I forgot. And you know what? Thank you for reminding me, Robert, because I meant to ask this question. But he wants you to explain NEEK. What's a NEEK?
Okay. Well, a NEEK is a nerd and a geek. It's a hybrid.
Oh, okay. Oh, gosh, Robert, I think Sheena has dropped here. Just as we were getting an explanation of NEEK, Sheena, feel free to call back in. I'm not sure. It's probably a Blog Talk Radio issue. I'm still on the line, so I don't think it has anything to do with the weather here, which is still clear at the moment. So, Sheena, if you're listening, please call back in. Robert, it's a conspiracy theory. Ah, maybe. But, you know, I've been doing internet radio long enough to know that you just keep talking and you don't panic when something like this happens. Hopefully Sheena will get back on the line. But I'll tell you, her website, again, I can't say enough about it. It's just, I know, Robert, I agree. It's so professional. And I really want mine to look something like this someday. But for anybody listening, if you're not in the chat room, Sheena's website is sheenafritas.com. It's S-H-E-E-N, like Nancy, A-H, F as in Frank, R-E-I, T as in Tom, A, S as in Sam, .com. That's sheenafritas.com. Definitely check out our website. And if you're an author and you need help with some of these things, please check out our services. I see Sheena's back on the line, so let me go ahead and bring her back on. Hey, Sheena, welcome back.
Hi.
No worries. It happens a lot with Blog Talk Radio. So, we were talking about Neek, so let's not miss a beat on that. So it's a combination of nerd and geek. So how did you conceive of that?
Okay, well, my brother and I, we were discussing how to describe ourselves, because we're totally geeky. We're into, like, all that nerd stuff. But we're not really a geek, and we're not really a nerd. So we're like, we need a name for ourselves. We were coming up with, like, these, I can't even remember what they were, but they were, like, awful, awful hybrid combinations of geek and nerd. And then finally my dad was like, why don't you guys just call yourselves Neek? We're like, that's a great word. We're like, did you just come up with it? And he's like, yeah. But then I think after a Google search, we discovered it was, like, already in use or something, so. But we still credit my dad for coming up with it. We liked it now anyway.
Yeah, I like it. It sounds like creativity runs in the family. So it's not anything that comes up in any of your books, the term? Or
No.
Oh, okay. I just had to ask that question. Another comment from Robert in the chat room, Sheena, is he says he loves the covers of your books. Now, did you design those yourself?
I came up with the concept of them, but I didn't paint them. I used DeviantArt quite a bit before I got sidetracked with the publishing and writing full time. So I'm not on DeviantArt as much anymore. But when I was on DeviantArt, there was this artist on there that I just really, really, really loved her work. And I was like, I want her to do my book covers. So I came up, so I talked to her, and I was like, here's a concept. So I was like, could you do something to make it look amazing? And she's like, yeah, sure. And so she's done the first two covers for me, and I'm hoping that she'll be able to do the third one. Hoping, maybe.
Mm-hmm. She did a phenomenal job. No, wait, tell us again, where did you find her? Can you spell it? Is it a website or is it a social media platform?
It's sort of a social media. It's like a social media website for artists. It's DeviantArt. That's DeviantArt, and art.com.
Okay. Because, like I said, I'm ghostwriting a book for someone now, and we're going to get to a point where we're going to need somebody to design the cover, so I definitely will check that out. DeviantArt.com. So if anybody listening is looking for those services, definitely check it out. And, Sheena, tell us again, you know, now, if authors that are listening, so you do proofreading, do you do editing as well for them?
I thought about it, but then I decided just to do the proofreading service. I do full editing for authors that are signed on to my small press.
Okay. And tell us about your small press and what are you, just publish certain genres like young adult fantasy, or is it open to others? And how, if somebody listening is thinking, wow, hey, I'd like to maybe go through Sheena's company, how would they go about that? And what are some of the parameters?
Okay. It's papercranebooks.com. We do young adult books of all genres, and we also do fantasy. Right now I have Michelle Franklin. She does epic fantasy romance novels for adults. And I have Holly Barbo. She has this really excellent series. It's kind of a, almost like a kickback fantasy science fiction. She does the Sage Sea Chronicles. And that one's sort of science fiction kind of fantasy series for, it can be enjoyed for young adult, but we're marketing it toward the adult audience, and I just signed on a young adult author. Her name is Morgan Strong Comnick, and we're hoping to have her novel out in August.
Wow, fantastic. And when did you launch, it's papercranebooks.com,
mm-hmm.
Correct?
Yeah.
And when did you launch this, Sheena?
I launched it last year.
Wow. Congratulations. That's amazing. And you already
have
four authors, did you say? You named Michelle Franklin, Holly Barbo.
Three authors plus me, so I guess it'd be four.
And so what are some of the things you do? So it's do you do print-on-demand as well as the e-books?
Yeah. And we just did an audiobook version of The Founders by Holly Barbo. and we're actually in production for her second audiobook. It's a really fun adventure, I guess.
Yeah, it sure sounds like it. And now with the audiobooks, who do you hire somebody to read them, or does the author record them? How does that work?
She wanted to have a narrator, so we were looking around, and I think she said she found the narrator is Maxine Lennon. That's who's narrating her series. And I believe she said she found that connection through Twitter. I think it was Twitter. And she's like, this is who I want to narrate my book. So I contacted Maxine, and she agreed to do it, thankfully. And she did a really, really great job with the first book. And I'm really looking forward to her reading for the second one.
Fantastic. Again, new technology is just amazing to be able to put us in touch with all of these people. And so I take it she had a studio she goes to, and
she has her own private studio, I believe. It's in her home.
Wow.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, that's great. And how hard was it? I mean, my gosh, you're so young and you've started this business. How difficult was that, you know, getting it off the ground and getting the support that you needed? And what advice do you have for somebody who wants to start their own?
Do more research than I did. I honestly had no idea what I was doing. I was just like, I'm just going to do this. I think you would need to find good editors, a good team of proofreaders or editors that can back you up if you can't do it yourself, and who you can depend upon to do it in a timely manner so that you can get the books out on your release schedule. You should, if you can't do the covers yourself, you need to have someone hired to do your graphic work, because covers are like everything, you know. First impression is really, really important. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that old adage about not judging a book by its cover is totally wrong. So,
exactly.
You know, when it literally comes to books, it's everything. Yep, so go ahead. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
And I think you need to just keep reading publishing news, see what's trending, see what's working. If you ever decide to open a small press, it will take up a huge chunk of your time.
I can imagine. And one of the things, too, I think, and where you would need those resources is to decide on pricing and how to structure it as well.
Mm-hmm.
How much you're going to charge for your services, and I guess what the percentages are of book sales kind of thing. Is that correct? You had to kind of work through all of that?
Yeah, we weren't really sure, so I just kind of kept looking through other small presses, seeing what they did. And I just kind of sort of modeled mine after theirs, also combining my small press experiences with the one I was with. And I think I finally worked it out, so.
Phenomenal. Well, it certainly sounds like you have, and you're able to really, you're living your dream, and you've got your own business in a field that you love. I would say that's you've succeeded.
Well, thank you.
So, Sheena, so before we have the last couple of minutes, so is there anything we didn't talk about that you'd like to mention, or anything new, up and coming, anything you'd like to promote?
Let me see. I think we covered everything. Head over to Paper Crane Books and check out the authors they publish. They're all phenomenal, phenomenal writers. I just absolutely adore their work. My third book should be coming out I'm hoping fall this year. And I'm actually working on a young adult project with another author. It's my first co-author project. And we're tackling a Alice in Wonderland retelling.
Wow, that's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Great. And, of course, the big news for this week is Sheena is going to be my guest on the RightStream Twitter chat on Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern time. And you can follow her at Sheena Freitas. It's at Sheena, S-H-E-E-N-A-H, and then F as in Frank, R-E-I-T as in Tom, A-S as in Sam. So I want everybody to follow Sheena and certainly join us for the RightStream Twitter chat on Thursday, because Sheena will continue this conversation, but on Twitter, and hopefully get new followers and make new impressions and get your name out there even more.
Looking forward to it.
Okay, well, thank you again for joining me today, and just congratulations again. I'm so impressed with everything that you've able to accomplish at such a young age, and I could see your future is very, very bright, Sheena.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay. Well, you're welcome. All right, and we will see you Thursday for the RightStream Twitter chat.
All right.
All right, take care. Thanks again.
You too.
Bye-bye. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that was Sheena Freitas. And again, check out her website, SheenaFreitas.com, SheenaFreitas.com, and her publishing site, PaperCraneBooks.com, and you can get to that through her main website. But, man, I am impressed, and I can't wait to chat with her on RightStream Thursday. So join us for that, 11 a.m. Eastern on Twitter. It's twitter.com. Just log on to Twitter at 11 a.m. Look for the hashtag, and as Robert says, it's the pound sign on your phone, RightStream, that's WriteStream. And we'll chat more with Sheena then. That's going to wrap up this week's RightStream Tuesday. Continue to pray for Oklahoma. Send some prayers. If you're able to donate, I know the Red Cross, go on Twitter. You can certainly find it. It's definitely trending. If you're interested in helping, and, you know, I've just been so amazed by the strength that those people have demonstrated in the wake of such devastation. But again, I want to thank my guest today. I want to thank Robert Bertrand of thankyoucapitalism.blogspot.com. Follow him at TY Capitalism on Twitter. I want to once again thank Sheena Freitas at Sheena Freitas on Twitter. And I will be back here again next for another RightStream Tuesday. I've got Montgomery Granger, and my other guest will be Catherine McNamara, and I will be getting a blog post out about both of them in the next day or so, and I'll be promoting that out there. So hope you'll join me again next week at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Again, check out the RightStream archives, blogtalkradio.com/RightStream, to listen to Just Believe with Lisa Tarvez, Military Monday with John D. Gresham, and, of course, the RightStream Tuesday archives with yours truly. So until then, take care, everybody, and I'll see you back here next Tuesday for another RightStream episode.